Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. We have today Adam Gorham is on the show. Adam is an artist who's done so much work. Archie, New Mutants, Black Panther, Cosmic Ghost, so much shit. And especially, don't even get me started on his indie work. Adam is such a cool guy. We talk about so much creativity being the best therapy. We talk about so many cool things. You guys are really going to get a lot out of it, especially if you're an artist. And really, I want to say actually just a creative. Adam and I really talk about some really cool things that really get your gears turning and, you know, figuring out what goals you want in life and so much other things. A lot to it. So thanks everyone for tuning into this episode. But before we get started, I definitely want to say, make sure you guys subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com for the new episodes every Monday. And also, folks, if you want to leave a review, that also helps too. Thanks everyone for tuning in to the episode. And without further ado, here is my talk with Adam. And we're recording. Adam, welcome to the show, man. I wanted to get you on the show for a while now, and I just never got around to like really asking you, because I'm like, he might not want to come on the show, but I ate my own fucking heart out right now. Because you're on, so welcome to the show, man.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I don't do a ton of podcasts. A lot of the ones that I get asked to do require me to leave my house.
Really?
But, yeah, the Skype stuff is good with me. Because I can sit here and I can doodle as I talk.
Which a lot of artists do, by the way. I'm not going to lie. A lot of artists work while we talk on the Skype, which is fine, or on the phone call, which is totally fine. I get that. One, you guys can balance hell of a lot of, I don't know how you do it, because you basically black magic. And I've said that numerous times, and I work in the film business too, when I'm not working in comics. And VFX artists, I've said that on the Film World show that I host, definitely are the people who do black magic, because I have no idea how the hell they make Megatron for Transformers. And if they're like, it's all coding, I'm like, okay, cool. Now you mix Matrix and magic. Way to go.
That to me, like working in film and all that movie magic stuff, that to me is actual black magic. Really? I guess because I don't know how to do it. I mean, I know how to draw comic books, so I get it. But I do appreciate it when people appreciate what I do. That's a nice feeling.
Yeah, I get the same thing a little bit of, I write comics, I write like four, I can't really say all the series right now because NDAs, but I know that people look at me, like I've talked to some of my artist friends who are like, I don't know how the hell you do it. That's magic. And like, maybe, I guess, but it's all, I guess, the point of view on it. And I think once you really start doing it, then you're like, oh, wait, it's not magic. It's just like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. This is like, okay, I get the hang of it. And then you put in the rest of the side of a job, but it's fine. No. But man, I got to start off by saying you have had a hell of a career so far. Like you've had your name in a lot of stuff.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
It can be, I guess, easy for me to lose track of, but I think this past New Year, I took stock of it a little bit because it, you know, 2019 marked, I guess, me working in comics for 10 years. So.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not mainstream. I didn't really hit, I guess, mainstream comics until about 2014, but before that, me drawing, like, you know, I consider the start of my career being like when I got, people paid me to draw a book, which would have been, I started drawing the book in 2008, but the book didn't come out until 2009, and that's when I felt like I really arrived.
What book was that?
In the Toronto scene. It was a book called The Vampire Conspiracy.
Oh.
And, self-published, and an adaptation of a low-budget independent horror film made by a director here in Canada who wanted to adapt his movie into a graphic novel. And so I had drawn maybe just like a handful of pages in my life at that time and found, you know, that opportunity when I first started looking for comic work. So I worked on that for a year. And then when it came out, I felt like, you know, the book, there was a book with my name on it. It was better than a CV or resume. So that's when I kind of marked the start of my career.
That's a hell of a way to start it.
Yeah.
Hell of a way.
And so it was 10 years ago as of like last year. And so I did take some time to reflect on all I've done since then. And I would say it's a respectable body of work so far.
Yeah. I mean, I would say because I did a little bit, I knew you from a few books, but then there was a little bit of the deep dive. Oh yeah. There was a little bit of a deep dive and I'm like, okay, let me take a look here and see what else has he done. I want to kind of get to know. Dude, I think you've done a really good Peritha when you've done a werewolf Jughead. I mean, last time I checked, you did that, like, unless the internet lied to me, you did a werewolf Jughead cover, right?
I did 13 of them.
Holy hell!
Or 12, yeah. I did that series Archie put out, and the first cover I did was for the second issue, and it was a variant, and they liked it enough to make me the regular cover artist at that point.
Which, by the way, could you tell younger self, like, hey, you're going to work on an Archie book? Oh, really? What's Archie and Veronica and Betty up to? Like, oh, no, it's Jughead, and he's, like, a werewolf, and there's, like, a lot of blood, and it's really meta. Like, ooh.
Well, working for Archie in itself is kind of a trip because, like, everybody, you know, I grew up with Archie comics around the digests at, you know, the supermarket cashier aisles, right?
Same here. I wish they still did those.
No, they do. They do.
They do.
Yeah, I get my kids some of them from time to time, and I think it's a mixture of like reprint and new material. But when I started out working in comics and was thinking about the places that I'd like to work at and things I'd like to work on, I never figured one of those places would be Archie and that it would be so fun, and like, you know, drawing stuff there is a blast. It was this weird, like, they reached out to me and asked if I would want to do work with them. And I think the first thing I did with them was a cover for Afterlife with Archie. Mm-hmm. And when that was still going on, and it was like, I forget what the last issue ever published was, because I know it's petered off, but the cover that I did was intended for, like, two or three issues after that, and I don't think it's ever going to see the light of day. But that was the first thing I did for them, for their horror line. And they liked it enough that they kept me busy, so I did a few other things, and then finally got a steady gig with them on Jughead. And I loved it, man. Like, the people at Archie, like, they're good people, and they're fun. Like, all of their properties are just really fun to work on. I just did a cover for their newly announced Super Duck book, which was a blast.
Yeah, that's kind of an out one out there, too. Like, hold on here. It's like, what are you doing? Like, Super Duck, and I don't think that'd be an email you did not look twice at.
It threw me. Like, they were kind of like, I remember getting that email asking if I wanted to do that, the variant for that book that Frank Thierry's writing, and they were like, they kind of like, you know, the attitude was like, we know this sounds like a silly premise, but check this out. And so the take on this thing's really fun.
Okay, I did, and that's got to be one too. Is I don't think people when they're like, oh, I worked on an Archie book, they're definitely thinking the old school Archie. But when Archie comes knocking on your door, you have no idea what it could be these days, because it could be like Archie in Hell, or it could be the Sabrina, like the one that the TV show is based off of now, or it could be a werewolf Jughead, like, or Archie versus Predator. It's like, you have no idea what the hell you're getting into, and I love that about what they've taken it.
Yeah, and I like, it's always been, like, I think that they are really going, like, you know, they're really going with it these days, but I remember, like, Archie always had, like, I remember one of the first comics that I bought with my own money was an Archie meets Punisher crossover.
Holy hell, they did.
It had a die-cut cover in, like, the shape of a bullseye. And I thought that was wild, so I bought it.
That was wild even for the time it came out in. It's like, wait a minute, what is happening here? It's like, the Punisher is coming to Riverdale.
It was a 90s book, so they were, like, they've always been up to those kinds of shenanigans, and it works. And they, you know, they're a lot of fun. And I think that's kind of what makes them stand out, is that, like, all of their books tend to be just, like, a lot of fun. There's nothing, even when they're horror, they're not taking, it doesn't feel, like, very heavy-handed or self-serious.
No,
like, it just, It just feels like every book feels like a good time.
It's true. It does. And I think that's the beauty that Archie still encapsulates, because it's really one of those where it's always a good time. You weren't reading it for the, especially when I was like yourself reading it in newsstands, you know, you're not reading it for the, oh, the action-packed adventure sort of thing. You're reading it because you want a good time and you just want to give a few laughs or stuff like that. Like, you're not reading it for the huge, like, end-of-the-world Man of Steel adventure.
You're cutting out a little bit. I'm sorry. I can't really hear you that well.
Whoop. We'll give it just a second. Hello, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
You cut out a little bit there a moment ago.
Skype is a hell of a thing sometimes.
Whenever these things happen, I'm never sure if it's me or the technology. But I do apologize if I'm not touching anything, but...
Fair enough. No, let's just not say it's a technology, because if you say that, then it will come after you. Then it will mess up on purpose. It's like, oh, really?
Yeah, I forgot how vindictive technology is.
Yeah, it seems like it these days. So, man, I always think these are important, but how did you... They are important because, you know, people really do keep track of it, and it helps other people starting up, but how did you get started in comics? Like, what was that thing, like, over, apparently now, 10 years ago? Like, what was that thing?
I've always drawn. I always wanted to draw comic books because I always wanted to tell stories with art. But, and then I mentioned how my first thing was this independent book. And then from there, like doing that, once I had a book with my name on it and I could take that and show it to people, I started to get traction with independent creators in the Toronto scene, which is where I'm based. And so I would go to the shows, local shows in Toronto, and show people my portfolio. I would get, you know, I got a few critiques from some pretty cool creators, and met, like, you know, other independent artists and writers who, a lot of whom were already ensconced in the Toronto scene. So for a long time, like, I always felt like I was the new kid on the block, because a lot of the people that I was meeting were, you know, like, I they had been like a part of the scene and hacking it and on the rise for a while. And so I when I got into comics, like, I didn't really go to a comic convention period until I was in my like early 20s, and so I, like, I didn't really have a, you know, like, nobody knew my face or name really until I've had this book to show off. So I kind of, I think, just, you know, out of obscurity, just arrived on the scene. So I made a lot of friends and, you know, a lot of prospective people to work with. One thing led to another. So I'd meet somebody and do some work with them. I started taking a workshop in Toronto hosted by, taught by Ty Templeton. So I learned from him. I learned from Leonard Kirk. And as I was taking these workshops, I was actively making books with, like, you know, with my friends. So everything that I was learning, I was directly applying. And I think that that really helped me build my skill set and move along. And so I had spent 3 years making a book with my friend Fred Kennedy. So we did a book, a sword and sorcery comic called Teuton, about a Teutonic knight who fights all of these old gods, these pagan deities. And so we did three trades of that. So we would spend a year making a trade. We would put that out in the big summer show in Toronto. And then as soon as that show was done, we would get started on the next one. So we did three of those. And then after I had done the last trade paperback of that, you know, of course, me and my buddy were talking about what maybe to do next, but I was also looking for other opportunities as well. And it was around that point in time that I had made friends with a couple of people who would later to become superstars in their own right, Mike Walsh and Brisson.
Yeah.
So I met them just as their book at Image Comeback was about to come out. And, you know, we hit it off and really got along. And, you know, Mike and I and some friends of ours went to a convention in Chicago, C2E2. And that was my first American show, and I got a taste of like what a big tentpole show in America was like. And so I found opportunities from basically showing my face stateside at conventions, and just making friends who were, you know, were making strides in the, on their own and were willing to open doors for me. So
I like it.
I got my break. I doing some inking work with Andy Bellanger on Kill Shakespeare, Dan McDade on a Planet of the Apes comic at Boom. I inked some pages for him, and then I inked some stuff for Mike Walsh on Alish Kott's book Zero, and I did some like background stuff with Mike on Secret Avengers that I didn't get credited for.
What?
What else? And so I inked him on an X-Files Ninja Turtles crossover at IDW.
Jesus, and man. You're just name dropping.
Got me some cover work on Turtles. And so from there, it was just one thing leading to another.
Holy hell.
And after that, I did an issue of Zero with Alish Kott. And that led me to doing Dead Drop with Alish at Valiant, which was a 4-issue miniseries. And
hey folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before, and it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, get yourself a box, you know? Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. His work, all the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least they are for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show. No, but kind of going off that, man, I definitely want to say I respect that entirely because you're a fellow guy who keeps going. You're hustling. It seems like you started and you just never stopped. Like, you got that itch and you just went for it. Like, holy hell.
That's certainly the case. I mean, I wouldn't say it was just an itch necessarily, but like a lot of my drive came from just when I started my career, I also started a family. And so for a long time, you know, I had to work really hard because, you know, this was how I wanted to support my family. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, I worked a lot of part-time jobs and full-time jobs in, you know, as I was doing it. I didn't really go full-time into comics until about 2013, 2014. Yeah. I guess about the time that I did an issue of Zero at Image. I've always been hungry for more. And whenever I don't have a lot of work, you know, waiting for me to do, I start to get really anxious and I begin to like question my future and everything. So I tend to maybe bite off more than I can chew, but there's not a lot of freelancing, there's not a lot of job security. So
no.
Having a lot of prospects and having a lot of things on the go is just one of those things where, it's the only kind of security that I can hope for.
It's true. I relate to that hard because freelancer in film and comics here in Arizona, which it's not really that much of. So like the comic company I work for, SGGS Comics, that I write my series for, All Creative Own, they are based in New Jersey. So it's like everything I really do is either for Hollywood and Cali or maybe for some freelance here in Arizona, but most everything I do is so out of state, it's ridiculous. And yeah, it's weird. And there's so much of that freelance life I know so much about too. It's just, it's crazy. It's really, that job security is not really there. You can, but it is there if you make it there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've had a point now where I've gotten a little comfortable, but I also have, like, I've had a few lessons where it's like, if you ever feel too comfortable, it's just one of those things where you can go from feast to famine so easily.
Oh yeah.
So whenever I start to feel, I'm at a point now where, like, whenever I'm too comfortable, I get uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I did for a couple of years, I would do a mini series, like a 5-issue mini series, which would take me most of the year. And, you get into the grind of that and you get tunnel vision and you don't, all you're looking at is finishing the book, but I would not really think beyond that and, would not line anything up. And that's kind of the thing about freelancing, is that even when you're actively busy and doing work, you still have to think about the next thing or maybe even the next couple things. And so you're planning, you know, and like any series, like a mini series that's 4 to 5 or 6 issues, I mean, that's at least 8 months of work. And so every book is essentially like nearly a year of your life. And it can be a little weird to think in those terms, to think like, I got to plan the next 3 years of my life.
Yeah.
But that's what it amounts to. And, you know, I hate thinking about the future. The future terrifies me. You know, it's one of those things that keeps me up at night. So
these days, especially, to say the least.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've always been that way, but yes, you're absolutely right. But what am I saying here? Yeah. So like I would finish a series and then realize like, oh fuck, I don't really have anything on to walk onto, and I'd have to pound pavement again. And so I would go from being like very comfortable from like having this basically like monthly gig for a time to then having to find potentially like a new book or a new assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And like a new book can, you know, getting cast for a new book, especially if it's ongoing, can some like take a couple months before you see a script. And so, you know, like you can tread water by either doing like fill in or issue work or, you know, cover work, which I happen to love. But you know, like I'm always sniffing the air for, you know, another long term gig, just to, you know, just so I'm not having to worry every couple months. And
yeah, I mean,
in that three month period where you finished a book and then you're waiting to start your next one or just looking for one, like, you know, like things can get pretty scary.
Oh yeah, especially for you, because you have a family. So that's also like the number one priority is like, I mean, because you mentioned you had one kid. How many do you have? Just one?
I have two now.
You have two now. So, and you know, you got a whole family there, including like if the significant other is there with you. You know, that's a whole lot of things there that you have to support. Like, that's a lot of stress. That's a whole lot of it. And apparently a puppy too.
Yeah, my dog Harlow.
Oh no.
She's
protecting
she's
the house.
She's the worst guard dog. She's super friendly.
Oh.
But
I got a couple of chihuahuas. Don't worry, I get it.
Oh, she's just it's very cliche. She's barking at the mailman.
Oh. I was like, is it air? No, it is somebody, but it's the classic. No, I feel that a lot, because having two chihuahuas, they like to just bark at air, because the air is a mischievous mistress, I guess. I don't know. I get it. The air is polluted here in Phoenix pretty bad, dogs. I read the billboards on my way to work. Don't worry, but... Oh, man. Yeah.
All right, well, that's dead down.
So, yeah, like, you got so much to worry about there, so that's just a whole level of stress. Like, I don't know how you do it, but it seems like you're doing pretty well for it. It seems like you're doing a lot of, I don't know, I think there's a lot of motivation there as a dad that really wants you to be like, okay, I want to do what I love, but I also want to like support my family, because, you know, both are important, but maybe the people come a little bit first.
Yeah. I don't know. I do stress, but it's not critical. One of the benefits of having tunnel vision with work is that you can sometimes shut those things out and you're able to just focus.
Really? Even with that?
Yeah, not always, but I would say a good amount of time. Like if I, it's one of the wonderful things about drawing for me, and always has been, is the escape aspect of it. Losing yourself in your work and in the story that you're telling. There's a lot of therapy in that.
Oh yeah, I mean, creativity is the best therapy. And I want to put that as a t-shirt. Like I've always said it to people, like creativity is especially the best therapy because it's 100% what you just said, you know, you get to escape, you get to, you know, build something, maybe build a character that helps make you feel better. Like, oh, this character did this. Like, okay, yeah, I put myself into that character. All right, I can do this or get over an issue or, you know, that's why I think I always say creativity is a good therapy for that reason of, you get to create, maybe make a better you, or maybe make a better world around you. Or, you know, just maybe get that stress reliever. Like, say, if you got anxiety such as I do, which I'm in a terrible business to have that, then, you know, if you make something, like, I'm writing the script, I got my music, my film score radio on Pandora, and I just go to town, like, just nothing, like, okay, here we go, anxiety's down, clearing the mind, like, do you agree to that, or...
I beg your pardon?
No, I was like, do you agree to that? Like, is that like something
Yes. Yes, I do. It clears your head and it gives me time to think and reflect. And if I'm working on a story, sometimes I do, you know, I do identify with the story that I'm working on or the character that I'm working on, even in really tangential ways. And that can be calming and, but yeah, I think creativity is just one of the healthiest ways to relieve a lot of tension within yourself.
Yeah, and it saves us a hell of a lot of money compared to a therapist.
Yes.
Just a little bit, to say the least. Everyone listening to this as a therapist is like, fuck you. But it's okay. We're fine. I get it. I've been. It's okay. We have a lot of stress. Like, we have the everyday life stress. We have our hustling stress. We have our... You know, we have a lot of stress in our lives, and if you find that job out there, the listeners too, you find that job out there where you're able to, or that passion, really, I want to say, not a job, and it calms you down, and, you know, it makes you a happier person, as long as you're not murdering thousands of people, then do it, you know? I got to put that in there, because these days you never know, but, as long as it, like, calms you down, it mellows you out, you know, you're able to make a better you figure out, like, oh my god, this is how I help my best friend, you know, there's something like that, you never know.
Not even necessarily, like, I'm lucky in that, you know, what calms me down also happens to me, be my profession, but I always find it great when people create for themselves, and they may have a regular job, but in their spare time they might draw or paint or do, you know, whatever creative thing, and that brings them comfort. I always find stuff like that pretty wonderful. So I think anything creative, whether it's something you want to do as a career or, and that's one of the things about comics that I wish at least people starting out, I kind of want them to know that, like, yeah, there's not, you, nobody, you don't know, you know, like, you don't need anybody's permission to make comics. You just can make them. And, you know, you don't have to make a Batman comic for that to be a real comic, you know? And I think that sometimes there is this idea where it's like, I'm not legit until I've done this or have this credit, and I think that that is not helpful to yourself, one of my favorite things are people who are just like making comics because like they want to, and they love the medium, and that to me is what is great about art and comic books.
My name is Andrew, and I am the host of a show called Rage Hunter. And on Rage Hunter, we cover the latest news and what's trending in the gaming industry with just a hint of some sarcasm and rage. You probably have this whole you know, this void in your life that you don't know how to fill, well, Rage Hunter is going to fill it. And the best part is we are everywhere. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play Store, Spotify, Podbean, Instagram, Twitter. So that way, you can get as much rage in your life as possible. And some news while you're at it. So come check us out and be a part of the greatest gaming podcast in the universe. See you there.
You know what? You could not have said it any better, Adam. I swear. Because you are 100% right. You know, we have the special medium that we are in. You know, you can put so much on digital. Like, my books are all digital right now. And, you know, that I'm with you on that idea, by the way. It's like, oh, you're not working in comics unless you're at Marvel or DC. Yeah, I often tell people, get your head out of your ass. That's stupid. Just stop it. Because you're never, if you do, congrats. But there's so many people I know that work at, like, IDW or Image and stuff like that that are big names. And some of them I know personally that have never worked at Marvel and DC. But they work on fantastic stuff that's their own or maybe not their own, you know? Like, you, and that's printed and everything. And, but, I'm with you on that medium. You can, there's so many options you can do. You can do your own creative book. You can do your own whatever it is. And nowadays, in 2020 now, we have the option to put it on digital. There's so many, like, you can do a Facebook group where it's just your book for people. You can do, like, Instagram only. You can do Twitter. So many options for you to do. Hell, you can turn your comic into a visual one, or they do, like, they edit it around and stuff like that, so they make a motion comic.
Yeah.
Hell, Jurassic World did a motion comic not too long ago. Did you know about that?
I did not, no.
Yeah, they did, it's like a tie-in, it's like mini stories, and they're not bad. It's on YouTube, and so, like, Jurassic World did a motion comic where it's stories based after the recent movie, and one of them included the damn T-Rex, and then one based in, like, the Battle of Big Rock thing that happened. And so, and they made their own comics. Like, yes, it was a voiceover thing for it, but you can also read what they're saying too. So it's like, oh, it's cool. And they move and stuff like that. It's like a really shitty, like, draft one animation, it kind of looks like. But if you're like, oh, it's a motion comic, and you put your head into that space, you're good. But otherwise, if you don't, then you're like, bro, what the hell is this cartoon? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, like, that's the beauty of what we're in right now, Adam. You couldn't put it any better.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I mean, I certainly, like, I had done a bunch of stuff before ever doing any Marvel work, but when I got Marvel work, I do remember people taking me a little more seriously. Like, there was this attitude where it's like, I have arrived, and it felt silly, but I at the same time, I kind of get it, because, like, I know that I tended to revere artists who had worked at, like, you know, like, my, like, you know, my lifelong aspiration was to work at Marvel Comics. I love Marvel Comics.
Yeah, same.
And you know, they just, that was, I was a Marvel kid, and so that was where I wanted to be, and then I got there, and that was, like, really terrific. And then I had to, you know, think about, you know, what now? But there, you know, so as much as I was happy to have done that, it did feel sometimes a little weird when people, I don't know, took me a little more seriously, or, like, you know, like, when anytime somebody treats you differently than they had, like, I think that you know, it takes some getting used to. And I see it, I get it, but at the same time, I also realize, like, it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I, creator doing one thing isn't necessarily, like, a better creator than somebody doing something else. And I mean, for that matter, like, I do a lot of work with, like, IDW and Boom and Valiant especially. Yeah. So, like, I like to get around, and I find that there are wonderful things about working with all kinds of publishers. So
amen to that. I'm with you. You got my support. Adam for new president. No, I've had the conversation with fans before of, they say, oh, you should only do people from Marvel and DC because we know all those books. It's like, no, I absolutely refuse to do that notion. Like, there's so many indie folks I've had on the show that have never worked at Marvel or DC and will probably refuse to. And they do so many goddamn good things at Valiant and maybe their own company. It's amazing to me. It's amazing. I do got to ask you this question, kind of going on Marvel, though, because that's kind of a 360, but I got to ask. what was your favorite thing to work on for them? Because you said you're a Marvel kid, and so am I. I'm like a fan of the big two. But what was kind of like that thing where you're like, oh my God, this is childhood Adam?
Oh, well, so far, I mean, I can't say that there's a couple of Marvel things that I would kill to work on, and I haven't done them yet. However,
fair.
When I was doing, I was working on Rocket Raccoon, book there, and while I was doing that, I got the opportunity to do some fill-in work on an issue of Black Panther, and that wound up, like, I didn't read a ton of Black Panther growing up, but when I got that assignment, the book that was out at the time was so dense, because I was doing like issue 14 or something like that, and the story like was such a dense, rich story. The world that was built there by Ta-Nehisi Coates and Brian Stelfreeze, that to do the assignment, they gave me like a PDF of every issue up to that point. And so I remember there was a weekend where I just read everything.
Jesus.
And it was the coolest experience, just getting to read 13, 14 issues of a comic book to draw, I think, like 8 pages. But like, that's just how rich the world was. And so getting to contribute to that felt really fun. Like, it felt like I was a part of, I don't know, like kind of an interesting club there. And yeah. I was really excited to do that. And then I did a little bit of inking work on a book called Edge of Venomverse.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, like I inked a couple pages there. And so for that, I got to ink like a Venomized X-23 and like I think a Venomized Captain America.
Like, this the most metal characters you can get, really, there. Like,
yeah,
hold
so,
on.
I mean, like, it was so kooky. It was pure fun.
But it seems Black Panther was high on that list, which, because that is a club. Like, I do want to touch upon that, because that is really, like, those people, the people who get to work on Black Panther, because they're really selective on it right now, especially because, you know, maybe there's a $1 billion movie in the works right now. Maybe, just maybe. So, like, that is a club, and you're right on the money on that one. And so, and it's, I want to say it's an iconic character and a character that means so much to people. So to be a part of that character, you're like, oh, shit. Whoa.
Yeah.
And it's a good story too, so it also helps.
Yeah, like I became a fan of the book just from doing that work, and it certainly put a feather in my cap. I loved the X-Men growing up, so doing a mutants and doing an X-related book was certainly a huge thrill. Was something I'd like to do more of, but beyond that, like, it's all childhood dream come true, to be honest with you. Like, there isn't yet really one thing that was like, you know, this was my Olympus and I've reached the top. Like, I don't know.
We never really have an Olympus, do we?
I think I remember talking to a friend of mine that was like, you know, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to do this. And he was like, all right, well, let's say you do that. What do you want to do beyond that? You know, the point they were making was like, you always have to think, you always got to force yourself to think higher, because your goals are, I think, usually more attainable than you realize. And certain things we put on a pedestal, and, you always, I guess you have to plan for everything.
Hey folks, Dakota here, and do you guys like Dungeons & Dragons as much as I do? Because if so, you're gonna like Adventures in Green and Garb. You know, they're a really fun new group on YouTube, their whole D&D campaign group, but let me tell you what they're all about. Adventures in Green and Garb started as most D&D campaigns do, around their parents' dinner table. Last year, they decided to bring it to YouTube, though, with the addition of costumes and green screens. Come on, that's adds some really cool flavor right there. Still in the family, their Season 1 campaign is nearing its exciting conclusion, with many mysteries yet to be revealed. They hope you enjoy it as much as they love making it and playing, doing so much of D&D. So smash that like button, subscribe and share, and look for them at this year's Gen Con. So I'm extremely excited to have these guys a part of the Comic Chronicle and Film World podcast, you know, to partner up and all that such, because they're truly wonderful people, and you guys should go subscribe and support them and give them a like. They're really, really fun. And because we've been playing throughout the commercial, I'm going to play you guys the theme that they have. The first time you're listening to this, you're going to want to go subscribe. And then we'll get right back to the podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Let us roll you a tale where heroes prevail as we wander the blight, prepared for the fight. On the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Banded by fate,
oblivion beware, watch as great fires whirl, lightning cracking the air, olden powers unleashed, together taming the beast. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Come, venture along, ye daring hearts, sound and strong, be not afraid, douse your doubts and join the
moving on, don't quit, dreaming up one forfeit, don't look back, stay alive, smite them, survive. Keep moving on, don't quit, dreaming up one forfeit, don't look back, stay alive, smite them, survive. Stay fast and through, we surrender our lives, to defend all the realm, till that good day arrives, when we lay down our swords, body scarred and bruised, having rolled a tale for you.
Roll for
the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Yeah, and I think it also is too, is we kind of live in a, well, we're living in a profession where we can achieve our goals, and when we do, because I've experienced that, of like, oh, I'm going to work in a film, and then I do it, and I'm like, oh, shit, what's next? Because once you get that dream, you're like, what do I do now? Oh, God, this was a life dream, and I did it at the age of 22. Fuck.
It's like, too soon.
Yeah, very too soon, and, you know, it really makes you think for a little bit of like, oh, shit, like, did I think I always wanted to work in comics? Did I think I was going to be able to work in comics at the age of 22 and have 4 creative-owned series and creative lead and merch and all that stuff? No. I did not. There was and a video game tie-in, too, by the way, for all of them? Fuck no. So you have to sit down and think, like, okay, what is the goal that you could be like, all right, I can maybe achieve it or a part of it, but then probably when I'm really old, then it will be achieved. Like, working in it for the rest of your life. Like, I think that's one goal I have. I don't know if you have that, too. Like, I want to do this for as long as I want can possibly go on, you know? I think that's a good kind of goal to have. Not like, I want to be on a Superman book. Because then once you're on that Superman book, you probably have no idea what the hell you're going to do next. And like, oh, God, what do I write? Like, shit.
Well, with art, it's a bit different. Like, I also got to think, like, just, you know, not literally, but not unlike a professional athlete, like I can probably only physically draw a monthly comic for so many years in my life. And
really,
once I reach that point where I physically can't do the monthly schedule, then I have to look at like something else and so on and so forth. And so I guess like as my body changes, like I think about things like arthritis and all that kind of stuff. And so I do think about like careers to transition into, and I've thought about storyboarding for TV and film. I've thought about this and that, and so I'm like as far as long term planning goes, like I think about, you know, like eventually transitioning into more of a writing phase, or at least writing and drawing on a schedule that is more like less punishing than a monthly grind.
Fair.
So that would be, I guess, like as far as like really far planning goes, that would be it.
Well, it's not too far. And I want to touch upon real fast as from advice, well, people I've known who've done it, is storyboarding for like film and television shows.
Yep.
Is extremely fun. And they will hire you within a minute because of all your work in comics. I will vouch for you on that one. If you're like, hey, I'm a comic book artist, they hire you guys so fucking fast in the industry. It's insanity. So if you go for it and you go for the right company, I think you'll be set. And I think you'd really enjoy it because that's you get to do that. And you're like, oh, my God, I got to like do a storyboard art for this. And then I got to see it on the screen. And sometimes those people get to go to sets. Like, a lot, well, depending on the company, they like to bring everyone on the set. So you could, like, go on your set and see, like, what's happening there.
Well, that's super cool.
Yeah, just keep that in mind. Keep that in mind when you're doing that. Like, because if you go for that, this is personal experience with storyboard artists and working with them in the past. Even if it's animation, too, like, you still get to see it come on a screen, man. So I would say if you ever want to take a break from comics, or if you want to do maybe both, if you do a little bit of comics, a little bit of storyboard art, I think, I'm not going to kid you, I think you would really enjoy it.
Oh, well, yeah, it's something I've given some thought to before. I think I would enjoy it as well. Like, I love movies. And so, I mean, like, I have thought about making movies before it. But that's really all that ever amounted to was like me thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But it is an industry that I would eventually like to explore.
Do you said you live in up north in Canada, right?
Yeah, I'm just outside of Toronto.
You are in a perfect place, sir.
Yeah, we have a pretty robust industry here, so yeah. I know that if I ever really wanted to go for it, it wouldn't be so far fetched.
I would definitely say because they do so much like Marvel and DC stuff up there is like kind of take a look at that because Warner Brothers always is hiring storyboard artists for like all the CW shows. And there's a guy, he almost came on the show. He just said, I don't really have the voice for it. So he didn't really want to come on. He's kind of shy. And he was a Supergirl story artist and he has been for like 4 or 5 years. So you never know. It could be that long of a gig. So you never know. And it's still going on. So it's one of those. Oh, man, I'll gush about it all the time. But, yeah, Scott, I would say if you ever want to, man, the door is always going to be open for you there.
Well, I'm still enjoying comics for the time being. But
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. See, keep going to comics, too. I'm not trying to take you away from comics. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to. I'm secretly adding more to your plate without realizing. I'm like, oh, my God, if he's doing comics and storyboard art, oh, his family would never see him. No. That would be a terrible idea. Oh, man. There is one thing I want to touch upon, good man, and I did hear about you did this, is you worked on New Mutants, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, how did you enjoy doing that? Because I don't often get to talk to X-Men folks on the show. Like, how was New Mutants for you? Did you know about them before going out of the book? Because they're kind of a lower-known team, or did you know, like, oh my god, yeah.
Oh, I, of course, knew about the New Mutants beforehand. Like, I loved the X-Men growing up, and was... if I didn't actively read the other teams like X-Factor, X-Force,
yeah.
Cable, etc., I was at least familiar with them. And so New Mutants wasn't a book that I read much growing up, but a lot of the characters from New Mutants I just encountered in other tales and stuff. But the fact of the matter is that like an X-book is super fun. We're in, like, you know, playing in that corner of the Marvel Universe is something that I always wanted to do. So when I was offered the book, I think I literally jumped for joy with my dog.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah. And so I was really excited. And, I mean, like, I had gone from Rocket Raccoon to New Mutants, and so...
Jesus, that's a hell of a jump.
Yeah, and so, I mean, like, there's certainly a difference in expectations between the two. Mm-hmm. So with Rocket... People just, you know, they wanted to put out an enjoyable book. And I found that with New Mutants, it was like, you know, they were a lot more fingerprints on it and like ideas of what it should be. And so there was some added pressure from that, but I mean, it was an experience that I was certainly lucky and happy to have. So, and I really... You know, like I said, I wasn't too familiar with the team beforehand, but I fell in love with the characters, in particular, Ilyana Rasputin.
Magic's amazing. You're a man after my heart, Adam. Like, I swear, Because she's, I could gush out about X-Men and all that, but what are your two favorite X-Men? Do your team, across all the teams, what you got?
I'm a sucker for Wolverine, and I always have been. So that is as far as like working in, in Marvel Mutants, Wolverine is my Olympus. So that's like, that's what I would love to be working on, at least for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And then apart from that, like, I have always been fascinated by the villain Apocalypse, and that's probably a symptom of being a 90s comic reader as a kid. For a time he was the coolest villain, like he had, I bought right into Age of Apocalypse. I think that his backstory is really cool. I'm not sure he's always the best utilized character, and I sometimes think that like his, you know, his power set is maybe a little too, like, it's so powerful that it's, like, it could use some better defining.
He's OP.
But he's also a character that's been around since ancient Egypt and has seen a ton of shit and has gone on, like, a cosmic odyssey. And that, to me, is fascinating. And so I kind of, if I could pitch an X-Men book, it would be about like the past adventures of Apocalypse, and which they did a little bit of, like they did an origin book of him coming through the ages and in ancient Egypt, and it tied in with the Fantastic Four, I think, at the end. But just the kinds of wacky shit that he had done throughout human history and how he influenced it. And I think that there was a couple of things hinted at in the recent Hickman stuff, because Apocalypse is a prominent character in the new X-Men book. So maybe, that will just happen anyway. But I always thought that that was a character who had enough of a history, similar to Wolverine, who they've done stories of him throughout the ages.
Oh, yeah.
I would figure that there is much more to mine from a character like Apocalypse. And I think one of the more obscure stories that they ever did with him was like Apocalypse versus Dracula, because I guess Dracula's he's a mutant in the Marvel universe.
He's a mutant. I mean, he's been off a mutant, he's been on a mutant. It's so weird. I know Jubilee's a mutant, but she's in the vampire right now, so it's that. Or is that happening? Like, there's
I wasn't sure if she's still a vampire.
No, I don't think so. I think they changed that.
Yeah, I think that maybe got changed, but I do remember her becoming a vampire, and there was a brief pocket of time there where you were seeing horror stuff creeping into mainstream superhero stuff, especially with the Ultimate Marvel stuff that Mark Millar was writing. There was like a slew of books where he introduced Ultimate Ghost Rider and Blade and stuff like that. And I think like all of the Ultimates became vampires briefly.
I think so. Man, that's really testing my knowledge early in the morning here. I'm like trying to think, like, wait a minute, did they? I don't know. What I'm hearing though is that Adam for Apocalypse 2020. That's what I'm hearing right now.
That would be cool. Oh, I would not say no.
See, I mean, here's the thing: there's a lot of people who listen to this show. A lot of people who say that they want to work on a project that have been on my show as guests. They tend to get the job, and I have no control over that shit. It's happened before. Like, a buddy of mine got to work on the Batwoman show after he said he wanted to work on a Batman project on my show here. So it could be possible. You never know. It's possible.
Oh, well, I'm busy as it is, but it wouldn't hurt to have on my plate.
Exactly. Well, what are you working on right now? Because we're coming near the end of the show here, man, but I definitely want to, like, promote your upcoming stuff here. Like, what are you working on now that you can talk about?
NDA's right now, I'm doing some work at Valiant for a series that'll be out later this year. They haven't formally announced it, but I think if you're paying attention to my social media right now, there's some hints there. Just recently, it was announced that I'm doing an issue of Savage Avengers, number 12, written by Jerry Duggan. So that'll be a really fun little project. It's just the issue, but it's a fun issue. And I will get to do some more Ninja Turtle stuff in the near future. And then beyond that, lots of covers and some creator-owned stuff that I'm pitching.
Ooh, okay. That got my attention right there. I mean, trust me, I love when people do creative-owned stuff. Like, oh, man. I want to know about it, but I know I don't want you to, like, say anything to spoil it on the show for, like, because you're pitching it, but are you pitching it, like, later on in the year or, like, soon?
I'm actively pitching it. I've got some work that I've, with my buddy Fred from Teuton, there's something that we are developing that we've had some interest in, and then I'm pitching something else with a prominent writer. And then a possible reunion with some creators that I've worked with before on a third thing. So there's a lot of creator-owned stuff that I am hoping to do.
I love it. Adam, I got to say this. You are a tease. It's like, you're like, I have Savage Avengers coming up. I got all these covers. And then you're like, I got my own creative stuff. Like, wait, hold on. Pump the brakes here, Adam. Like, you got your own creative thing? Like, what? Like, oh. That's amazing.
I can't give it all away yet, but
no shit. Yeah, I don't want you to get in trouble or like lose the pitch.
Yeah, there's lots in store. I'm very excited for the next couple of years.
Cool. I love it, man. Well, where can people find you at on social media?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is Adam T. Gorham, and I'm also on Instagram with the same handle, Adam T. Gorham. I have an online store, Adam Gorham. .bigcartel.com, where I sell my sketchbooks and like sketch covers occasionally, so you can get some stuff there. I also have a rep who sells my original art from various comics, Cam Jarvis at inkyknuckles.com, and or I should say Cam at inkyknuckles.com, the website being Inky Knuckles. So those are all of the main places on the internet where you can follow me and get my stuff.
Awesome. I dig it, man. And people, go follow him, because obviously if you have heard if you listened to this episode, Adam's a very knowledgeable dude with a lot of stuff, and he's got some really cool projects coming up. So give him a follow.
Thanks, man.
Of course. I'll trust me. I love supporting creators. I'll do it every damn day of my life. Even though I am a creator and I don't support myself that much, c'est la vie. But that's a whole different situation. Folks at home, if you want to follow me, you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter or at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. Thanks for everyone for listening. Adam, any final words for the listeners at home?
Be good to each other.
That is the, you know what? In the way 2020's been going, that is the best advice you could give. Oh my God, it's so true. Alrighty, and all the fans out there, stay classy, mutants.